Welcome back to the Go To Food Podcast. Today we are delighted to be joined by Angelica Gels, who's the perfect hybrid of a serious chef, also a food creator, ex-mob. She's put her foot in, you know, a thousand different pies, and she's come out a wonderful, wonderful person. Angelica, firstly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Are you happy to have sort of escaped the Michelin star kitchens? Are you finally sleeping?
So basically, my Michelin star kitchen experience was only 6 weeks long, by the way.
Okay.
That's probably enough though, right?
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
It was more than enough.
Yeah.
But no, me getting out of the kitchen is definitely what I wanted. But then I came back for a few different reasons. I feel like my work-life balance is definitely better now that I'm out of the kitchen.
Why was it only 6 weeks long?
Oh,
go on, tell us.
Straight in.
Yeah, please.
So basically, I joined a restaurant called Behind
at
the end of December. It was like mid-December last year. And it was really good. It was a small team, first time going Michelin, and there was six of us on the team. I was the only girl. The chef was nice enough. Like, he was cool. Like, I met him before, we hung out. Like, he was nice enough. But then in the kitchen, he was just one of those, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just one of those.
What, as in old school?
Yeah, let's say that.
Yeah, okay.
It's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I did get a little bit of special treatment. It wasn't usually directed at me. The shouting, the swearing, the bullying. For me, the environment became too hostile and like, I was scared to go to work very soon in. But nothing like, nothing crazy, but I'm also very emotional. Like I'm not really built for the vibes of the kitchen in the sense that like, if you shout at me enough, I will cry. Maybe not in front of you, but I will go to the bathroom and cry. So the dynamic of having everyone like screaming and shouting and like swearing at each other, it really just wasn't my vibe.
I'm the same. Cried a lot in kitchens.
Yeah, no, because it does, it's a lot because it's already stressful enough. You're trying to do your best and obviously like it's just a lot. Yeah.
What are you doing? What was your sort of location in the kitchen when you were working there?
It wasn't set up into sections in the traditional way. It was more all like all hands on deck, but I was essentially a commie helping do everything apart from like leading the kitchen this day. But it was quite cool because it was basically a chef's table where you were you basically had to serve the customers yourself.
Nice.
So no waiters or waitresses worked there.
Awesome.
We did like all the cleaning up, all the washing up, all the serving. We did everything pretty much. It was very hands-on. So that translated in the kitchen and also on the floor as well. So you'd help greet guests, you'd help sit them down, you'd explain the menu to them. Like you had to do it all. So it was really cool.
That's
in
awesome.
That sense. So it was a little bit different in terms of the structure.
Yeah. What was your favorite dish from that time working in the restaurant?
One thing I will say about Behind is that was the best menu I've ever worked on and it was my favorite menu. And also I got given a meal before I joined to kind of say like, here, come to eat. And if you like it, come join our team.
Oh, I may do
which
that.
Is the perfect way to join a restaurant, by the way. Free Michelin star meal, literally for free, tasting menu. So I got to enjoy the menu before I worked on it, which is really cool. And it's the only menu I would say that I just loved everything. Like I honestly loved everything. My least favorite thing was like one of their drink things that they had on there. It was basically like a coriander lassi instead of like a mango lassi.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But again, it was really nice, but that was my least favorite thing. And my favorite thing on the whole menu was this smoked kipper butter sauce, basically a beurre blanc. And it had like a smoked kipper reduction.
Oof.
And then it also had trout roe, chives, fresh apple, and preserved lemon, I think. And it was honestly so good. I used to just eat it by the spoon.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was
Give us one more great dish from that place, because that sounds insane, even though the guy's a massive bully.
I would say I took inspiration. I did this actually at home once. So they did this trout in nori thing, which is basically like a roulade that comes out as like a little mosaic when you slice it. So you get like the strips of trout, and then you roll each strip in nori, and then you roll each rolled strip into like a circle, so it creates like a sausage. Then you sous vide it, and then when you slice it, you've got this little like mosaic thing because all the little pieces are stuck together. And that was really, really, really cool. I really liked that.
Are you still tempted by the world of Michelin star food, or have you gone like, enough's enough? I spent 15 hours a day doing mise en place and being screamed at.
It's annoying because I love the food and I love that kind of cooking and I love that style of cooking. But I think the reality is I don't know if I can survive in that world. Because what I don't want to do is do the same thing that I did at Behind. Because you know what it is with Behind? Like, Behind was a great place to work for me because I had part-time hours. I was really flexible and I had set days. So he gave me three doubles a week, back to back. Didn't usually do most of those because he would cut my hours a lot because if they weren't busy, he'd say you could stay home, right, so you could do your content. So it was quite flexible and it worked for my lifestyle. So if I was going to work in any Michelin star kitchen, it kind of made sense to be there. So what I don't want to do is go to another chef and obviously like ask him to give me all these things, like kind of like accommodating my like, you know, lifestyle. And then I just end up leaving because I low low-key don't enjoy it.
You were only there for 6 weeks, but what did you learn from the Michelin Star Kitchen? Because obviously we're going to go on to your earlier restaurant work, but what did you learn? What does a chef learn from working in such an amazing place?
I would say the one thing that kind of made me think, oh, okay, is like I expected Michelin Star to be really, really, really intimidating and intense, and like they do everything super different and super meticulous. But what I realized is, yeah, they obviously take care more than your average restaurant, but it's more about like how you make things look and what you do to certain things. So for example, it's just like loads of garnishes were really simple, but they were elevated by how you made them look. So for example, using a mandolin to slice a vegetable just adds like a certain level of finesse. So like when we were putting plates together, sometimes I'm like, this is actually so easy. You've just used like a little fancy tool. You've made it like used a, like a really nice plate, and then you've obviously put it together, and now it's a really nice dish, if that makes sense. I would say just like the tools that you use to prepare your ingredients. And I know it's a bit cliche, but I think the less is more thing as well. Less is truly more. And at Behind, they didn't have any spice on the menu at one point, and then they added curry powder to a dish. But it was like, it was crazy to me, like what everything I would usually associate with certain things, they didn't really do there, but they still managed to like surpass the levels. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, this is a different way to look at food, and I like it, because I'm quite spice heavy. Like I use all these like pungent ingredients and all this kind of stuff. They just about had soy sauce, but like I never saw them use it, and then like the spice came halfway through my 6 weeks there, and then do you know what I mean? It was like, but they get flavors from other things.
That's quite cool. I think Marco Pierre White said like perfection in the kitchen is just doing lots of little things really well. And it sounds like that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
Like not trying to overcomplicate
things. I thought the recipes would be like super technical and stuff, but they weren't. It was just about doing things like really well.
You're obviously a huge foodie. Was that always the case? You know, paint a picture about your childhood, growing up, falling in love with food.
So yeah, I've always been a foodie, and I'm laughing because it was just my whole identity as a kid. It was like my whole personality. So I feel like from like around the age of 6, let's say, I started to become obsessed with food. My favorite show on the TV was anything that had Jamie Oliver in it. Like I would literally watch his show.
He's a beautiful man.
To back. Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember Two Greedy Italians.
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God, that show, I literally lived on that.
Proper telly.
So yeah. So things like that I loved back in the day. And then I remember like when I would get pocket money, I would go to the charity shop and then spend my pocket money on cookbooks because they were like really cheap, like £4 and under for a really good cookbook. Yeah. I'd get like the Delia ones, all the Jamie Oliver ones, of course, that was like by default.
Of course.
But just like little things like that, like I was generally obsessed with food. And then obviously eating was just always my favorite time of the day. Like it was just like the most exciting time of the day.
Did you grow up in a household where food was like A, important, and B, good?
Yeah, I mean, good. Well, maybe I'll explain that.
Yeah, you've got to say yes.
My mum, she was a good cook. No, she was good, but she wasn't like amazing in the sense of like she's quite old school. So my mum's the kind of cook where like she'll put something in the oven, and whether it's ready or not, she's going to check it when the TV show's finished. So it could be a 20-minute thing, but the show's an hour. Do you know what I mean?
I think so like people who put the oven on 200 always.
No,
and it's kind of always right. But like,
just about right.
Yeah.
No, literally. So food.
What sort of stuff's coming out of this oven?
I mean, anything. Like we kind of grew up eating kind of British food, but then like flavorful food as well. Lamb chops is something I remember eating as a kid a lot, like stewed lamb chops. That was kind of like a treat meal though.
Yeah.
But that was something that my mum would do quite a lot. Pies, just like, you know, shop brought pie, one of my favorite things in the world. But they would come out of the oven darker than they were meant to and drier than they were meant to. What else did we eat? We would eat obviously lots of pasta, bacon, loved bacon, sausages, quite British food.
It's like good stuff.
Can you remember the first dish you made?
Cupcakes. Yeah.
Cupcakes.
Yeah, I think I remember making, like, I think every kid does that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you obviously get given, like, a mixing bowl and you're allowed to.
It was like Kit was saying last week, he, you know, just baked to try and get, you know, hold of the little sort of sweets you put on top.
Yeah, smart move.
Yeah.
Very smart move.
Yeah.
I see you're doing a lot of sort of restaurant reviews on your Instagram at the moment, which are incredible. If a Martian came down on Earth today and said, where's the best place to eat in this country right now? Where's he going? What's he eating?
My answer will always be Kiln. In Soho, I think Kiln is truly one of the best restaurants I've ever been to, and definitely in London.
Yeah.
The first time I ever went to Kiln was in like 2018, and it was just the kind of food that blew my mind. And I was like, wait, what? I've never seen Thai food like this.
Yeah, it's high key, isn't it? Like, everything's kind of
serious.
What's your favorite dish there?
The clay pot noodles that they do, unreal.
Just talk our listeners through what they are if they're not familiar.
So I haven't had it for a long time, but it basically comes in a clay pot and they're glass noodles. And then they have this green, pungent, zingy sauce that they serve on the side. And I think there's like a crab-esque mixture down there. So you pour the green sauce on, you've got these stringy, long noodles. You mix it all together and it's just crazy. I really need to go back, but I just need someone to come with me, to be honest.
What's the one foodie smell which takes you back to your childhood? I mean, growing up, if you can remember one sort of scent in the airwaves. And Ben, I'll ask you the same.
I would say my mum loved cooking with paprika. So maybe like the smell of paprika, she'd put it in everything. So even if she was making like a bolognese or whatever, she'd probably put that in the beginning as well. So I would say the smell of paprika for sure.
Ben?
Mine's bolognese too, but it's not paprika. She used to use a Branston pickle.
Oh, mad.
In the base of a bolognese.
What, like the liquid of it or?
I think she couldn't be asked to cut onions, pickle, right?
Yeah.
So she'd put Branston in and carrots. And so like that is a really specific... Mad.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, bolognese, but different vibe.
That is quite incredible.
Unusual, yeah.
I want to finish on Imishan Star Days. I mean, obviously it was a short kind of experience, but I can imagine, and we like to bring this up many a time, and you've worked at other restaurants as well, so maybe we can bring that into the equation as well. What was the best team family meal you had? What do you call them again? Team meals, family meals?
Staff meal.
Staff meal.
At Behind, on my second day, let's say, we had a really nice roast lamb dinner. And chef was basically saying that there's, let's call it like a lamb dealer. Like there's this guy who like has this really premium lamb. It's like the best lamb in the country. And like, if you know, you know, and if he's cool with you, you can get your hands on it. I don't really know, but it sounded cool. He got his hands on some of this lamb and then they did like a slow cook overnight at, I don't know, in the rational overnight, whatever. We came in the next day, we had this lamb and I was literally like, oh my God, I've never had lamb like this.
Different year.
No wonder it's like really hard to get.
Who is the secretive guy?
I don't know. I didn't really ask too many questions. I was new and I was like, okay, cool. Like how good can this lamb really be? And then I ate it and I was like, whoa. But that was also like, I think it was my second day or second week or something. And then yeah, that was an amazing meal. That was truly amazing.
I want to track down this lamb dealer.
I know. He's a serious guy.
What is it like working in a Michelin star kitchen, as you said, as a girl? I mean, obviously we just had Ajeke Bakari win her first Michelin star. What is the industry like? We've got a lot of guests who come on this and say, actually, you know, the restaurant industry's got to a place now where it's really modernized. It's, you know, in a good space compared to 5-10 years ago. What's it like when you're actually in the kitchen?
So I would say my Michelin star experience was fine because, again, the team was small. So I think it wasn't what you're expecting in the sense of those kind of things. But in kitchens in general, to be fair, Behind was the best kitchen I've worked in for being treated like a girl, I would say. But every other kitchen I've worked in, I've definitely been sexualized. I think that's the number one thing for sure. Like the stories I have.
Well, could you share a couple of stories? Just so, I mean, obviously this is a serious podcast as well. So we would like to know how crazy it is. I mean,
okay, cool. So like when I was 17, I can't say which restaurant because I do love the restaurant.
Yeah.
But when I was 17, my nickname in the kitchen was Young and Tender for sure. And that was like, Jesus. That was like a, just like a joke. Do you know what I mean? They would come like Young and Tender, Young and Tender. And obviously at the time it was like hilarious, but don't get me wrong. This is just within. So obviously you have management and stuff. This is never from management. This is just like within your peers or like people who maybe don't work there now, maybe do whatever.
Yeah.
So Young and Tender was one of them. I would also say in a kitchen after that, I had people just coming into me and like whispering things in my ear and asking me questions. And it was just like crazy things. Like it was very normal in one kitchen that I worked at to talk about your sex life openly. And like one of my chefs would come in and be like, oh, I had sex today and da 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 da. And like, I'm going to do so good at my job today. Or like, you didn't do it. Like, it was just a lot.
Just while you're like prepping.
Normal stuff. It's like so normal to the point where like, it took me getting out of that to understand, because basically my kitchen experience, just to summarize it real quick, was I was a chef from 2015 to 2019 and I didn't come back till basically end of last year.
Right.
After 2019, I spent my time in like offices and doing like normal stuff. And I realized, oh, okay, cool. So that working environment like wasn't actually that normal, but you're accustomed to it when you're in it.
Yeah. What about social life as a chef? I mean, does it feel quite restrictive not being able to see people because you work such long hours? Or
yeah, I would say I missed a lot.
Your friends, family? Times.
I missed like out on birthdays, that kind of stuff, which is always really annoying. But just generally having like a work-life balance, because obviously the hours that you're working are always ridiculous. And just like not being able to have a rota that's set and obviously waiting for them to drop it. And I just feel like every kitchen I've ever worked in has always used like a rota as kind of like a gold card. And like they would like withhold your rota to like the end of the week and then they would drop it. And then obviously it would never be what you had actually requested. And they'd be like, well, kind of just discuss between yourselves if you want to switch shifts. So I just found like having a social life was quite hard. And very then hard. I went from that to having a 9 to 6 for like 4 years. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Was that in food as well? I mean, obviously we're going to touch on Mob, but apart from Mob.
So before Mob, I was at a company for 3 years. And it was a really cool company. I was very lucky to get that considering I was like changing industry and obviously like technically restarting from the bottom. And it was a company called Untold Studios. They do visual effects and TV adverts. They're like big in their world, but I also didn't know anything about VFX before I joined. But they would do cool stuff like the John Lewis advert. They did the one with the green Edgar dragon. I don't know if you remember. That was like, so when I joined, they were just starting to do that. So I saw that kind of like grow and like
awesome.
Get put out. So that was really cool. And I basically was just an office manager and office runner then manager, which was quite cool.
But you wanted to come back to food?
Yes. So at the time when I joined, I thought, cool, this is like me for life now. Like I'm never going to be in food again. It will just be a hobby and like a thing that I do on the side. And then like, I guess you could say when we went into lockdown, I was kind of just like so bored. And I had a really good situation in lockdown, I'll be honest. Like they paid me in full. There was like, we obviously had furlough, but because of my salary, they just topped up the extra. So I just got a full. It was literally like nothing changed in terms of that, which was great. And I want to be able to say like I started content during lockdown, but I didn't. It was just more the time where I was like, okay, cool. This is, I do want to get back into food somehow.
Yeah.
But I didn't take the steps until like a year later, to be honest. Getting back into food for me was kind of just like rediscovering my passion again.
Well, I think it's time to have a drink because this has been a wonderful start. I mean, our producer George is sat over there exhausted from the incredible back and forth we're having here. What do we have, Ben? You're bringing out some crystal glasses. They look wonderful.
I've got my little crystal glasses and I've put a cherry on a stick. So I always think that looks fun.
Glass-aged cherry.
This look great, yeah.
And then I tried to make, I don't know, to be honest, I don't quite know. I sort of started out, I wanted to make a pineapple daiquiri. I don't know why.
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Because I always think I'm really particular about drinks. So I was like, whatever you've got there, I probably won't like it, but we're on the right track.
Are we in the right zone?
Yeah. I'm a tropical babe.
We're in the right area.
I'm a tropical babe. I was thinking it was going to be like a Negroni or something.
No.
Oh, no.
Something like,
they've been banished.
Something bitter and mature. I don't like this kind of thing.
I'm moving away from that.
Yeah, I don't like those kind of drinks.
I tried to make it like frozen. Oh, it is frozen.
Oh my God, this is literally like my dream.
Oh no, it's one of them. Well, you're having
it
frozen.
You taste it.
Yeah, it might be absolutely.
What is it? Do you want to give it a name?
Pineapple gels.
Yeah, pineapple gels.
Yeah, pineapple Fuck gels. It. I vibe with that.
Wow.
Oh my God, thank you.
I mean,
that's incredible. Well, cheers. Thanks for coming in.
You need to try it first. It might be absolutely
Thanks cheers. For having
Thanks
me.
For making it, Ben.
I got quite a patchy track record on drinks.
Strong.
Too strong?
No, good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
That's a bit mean.
Yeah.
Not too strong?
No, that's a bit mean.
Amazing soak the ice. Incredible. As we drink that, and now we kind of know which channel we're going down in terms of flavor profile, what's your go-to cocktail?
Pina colada. So this is like next door neighbor.
I could have.
No, we're good.
Who did I do a pina colada for?
Can't remember, but it was very good.
I did one for, so I,
no, we're
otherwise
good.
I would have done your
no,
pina colada.
No, we're good, honestly. Like, this is next
but this is in the right
yeah,
zone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
When you're having your pina colada or you've got some friends coming round for a little supper, what little snacks are you putting out? This is what we really get off on, weirdly. You know, what snacks are you putting out for your guests?
Okay,
so or little canapes?
So I'll be honest, I'm not really a canapé babe.
Okay.
I'm more of like a starter, main, dessert kind of.
We'll get onto that later.
Well, actually, not even dessert, like starter, main, main.
Really?
Let's say that, yeah. I've had a few dinner parties this year and it has been starter, main, main.
Wow.
But in terms of snacks, like, of course I do love a snack, but again, like, it's just a weird one. Like, because I live with a flatmate, she's a vegetarian, whatever. I only cook for myself. So my snacks and leftovers are always things that I've just made before, do you know what I mean? Which can be great leftovers.
Yeah,
I can make film a video and obviously eat what I'm filming and then have the other portion as leftovers and it can be great.
Yeah.
Talk us through starter main main. Just talk us through what that consisted of.
So one of my dinner parties that I had this year, it was a behind inspired menu. So basically, because I only worked there for 6 weeks, one of my friends got to come. So I was like, guys, don't worry, just come to mine and yeah, I'll teach you everything I've learned and I'll put it in one dinner.
So what was on the menu?
So at behind, we had this cured mackerel dish, which I really loved. It was really minimal. It was a piece of cured mackerel, like a piece about this big, and it had a yuzu emulsion on there. And just in general, I was always eating that, so it was really nice. So I took inspo and I did a cured mackerel with a caper dressing and just like cheap caviar, you know, the ones that you can get in the supermarket. Yeah. And that was really, really, really nice. And the caper dressing had like lemon, parsley, and it was just really nice. And then for course two, we did the salmon roulade thing that I told you about.
At with the nori.
Trout, yeah. But at mine, I did salmon. Also, salmon is so expensive. Like, I didn't even realize. I never eat salmon at home just because I don't really eat fish at home. But I went to go buy this fish from the fishmonger, and I brought a piece like this big, like smaller than an A4 piece of paper, let's say. And it was like £8.
It's mad, yeah.
But it was like really like long but flat. And I was just like, what? And it was literally, anyways. So I brought that, and then I made the salmon roulade thing, and then I served that with a butter sauce. Mm. And that was really, really, really good. It was quite a technical one to execute, though. Like, obviously, rolling it and then sous-viding it at the right temperature. And it was way bigger than the one that we did it behind, like, thickness-wise. So I didn't know how long to cook it for at all.
How are you sous-viding at home? Have you got, like, a machine?
Yeah.
You've got a sous vide at home?
Yeah, so when I was younger, this is what I used to spend my money on. So when I first got jobs in kitchens between, like, the age of 15 and 17... when I used to get paid, this is the kind of stuff I used to buy with my money.
Right,
I've got a sous vide, a dehydrator, smoking gun. My cooking in my kitchen, I'm telling you, is a dream.
You're better kitted out than most restaurants.
It's a dream. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a bit of a hoarder like that. So when I brought it, my intention was to have it for my future house.
Okay.
In my future life.
Well, that's still going to happen.
Which is like way in advance.
Good to plan
ahead,
though.
I'm just one of those people where I'm like, I will use, because I obviously don't use it like that often, but I'm like, there will be a time where this is like properly has a space in my kitchen.
So that was starter, then main. What was the third main?
And then we did a sea bass with, what sauce did they do it with? Oh yeah. Okay. So at Behind, they also, the sauces at Behind were so good. So, so they did this mussel and cauliflower velouté thing. Mm. And I personally hadn't had a sauce like that. I think it was inspired by a French sauce, but I hadn't had a sauce like that.
Is a velouté like creamy?
It's kind of like a stock sauce thing, kind of like a looser puree.
Okay. Looks like a bechamel. No.
It can do, depending on the flavour.
Okay, right. Yeah.
But technically this one, yeah, because it was cauliflower. It was basically a sauce that was like a cauliflower soup, but then you kind of had like mussels blended into it. And for me, the mussels being blended into it like changed the flavour completely. And I just think it was like so mind-blowing to have mussels in the sauce as opposed to just like on the sauce. So I did that basically. I did like a grilled piece of fish and then I had this sauce and it was basically all about the sauce. Like you had like a whole jug and you just drenched it in the sauce. And then that was on a bed of like buttery, vinegary potatoes. And also a little hack that I got from Behind, just like adding vinegar into your mashed potato, like 2 tablespoons, 3 tablespoons, it just like changes 100%. Everything. So now whenever I'm eating my shop brought pies, which I do all the time, vinegar in the mash, and it's just
really
so good.
It brings them to life.
Yeah. And like literally it will make you just want to eat it straight out of the pot. It just has that little bit of tanginess, just background.
I would say actually any, if you boil potatoes and then you put them in the colander or they're steaming, bit of vinegar.
Oh, really?
When even if you end up roasting them, or you just eat them boiled, or mashing them.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's bringing them back to life in some way.
Yeah, and it gives them this like I don't know, a little pep in them. It's delicious.
Okay, so that was the start of main, and then did people need a sweet afterwards? Did you know?
Doesn't sound like they were getting given one.
No. You know what it is, yeah? I want to be that girl who's like, I'm so great at desserts. And like, I try and I can do desserts, but like, they just don't usually hit the mark that I want to deliver on.
What would be your go-to dessert if you had to do one?
100% a tarte tatin. Love a tarte. Ooh. I love all apple desserts.
Okay.
But I'm very particular about desserts. So my biggest thing is a no-go for me, fruit and chocolate. I cannot handle fruit and chocolate. I also think
I admire that.
It's just weird. It's like you
what
don't,
about a fruit and nut bar?
No, because you've got the raisins in there. For me, it's an acidity thing. I do not like acidic things with chocolate. It just doesn't make sense on my palate. But it's quite a common thing. Like as someone who doesn't like it, it's everywhere. I'm telling you.
Okay, we're not saying you're crazy.
So you're not, I actually weirdly on Instagram this morning. So we had a guy called George Williams on, and he gave us this amazing like hangover thing he did. Mm. Anyway, he put a video on Instagram this morning. He's pulled out a drawer, had his setup, and it had orange buttons, like Cadbury's buttons with orange in them.
No.
And I had to go after him. I was like, that's disgusting. No, what are you doing?
No. Why would you
It's going to make your life worse, not better.
No, honestly.
But anyway, I'm fully with you.
Yeah, no, so apple dessert. And I'm in the process of just trying to perfect this tarte tatin that I saw on Instagram. It's basically a tarte tatin where you have like the apples in half instead of in quarters. But it's just about cooking them through while they're that big.
Yeah, quite a lot of apple.
Yeah. And every dinner party I've had this year, I've tried to make it and it just hasn't been served because I haven't liked it.
You're not happy?
Oh, really? You're just leaving it in the kitchen?
I mean, no, I let them eat the apple, but like, it just hasn't... It
you give them like a deconstructed version.
Yeah, they kind of, we kind of just eat it from the shared plate because it's just like...
Yeah. You refuse to serve it. What about your go-to drink for a night out? You finally escape the kitchen. You're on a night out with the girls, with the guys, just everyone together. Big night. What are you drinking?
I'll probably drink rum and lemonade or rum and pineapple. So this is...
We're in the right
No, honestly. Honestly, I can't tell you. This is a bit me.
What about the next day you wake up incredibly hungover? I want to know what you're drinking on your hangover and also what you're eating. What is your hangover gear?
Okay, so my hangover drink is definitely apple and mango juice.
Ooh.
But I went through a really rogue phase.
What's the mix? 50-50 or?
Just like when you buy...
Off the shelf.
I thought you were doing a bit of...
No, I don't have a juicer. Okay.
Soon.
I went through a really rogue phase of having cider in the morning. It was just, yeah, it was just a
Hold on. Generally, or when you're hungover?
No, when I was hungover. Yeah. There's this brand called, you might even know them because they do wine, and they're called like Chapel Down.
Oh yeah.
And they have
award-winning wine, I think.
Really it random. This is actually something I got from when I worked at that post-production company called Untold. We used to have the drinks in the office just in general. Mm. And it was my job to order them. So we used to order this cider that they do, and it's called Curious Brew within Chapel Down. So Curious Brew. It's the best cider I've ever had. It's super tangy, super zingy, green apples. I don't know what they put in there, but it's unreal. So when you're hungover, you drink it. Obviously, it's only like 4%, whatever. You drink it and the tartness and the bubbles going down. Oh my gosh.
What was the charm?
It sorts me out.
And what are you pairing that with food wise? Maybe not the cider, but you know, if you're a hungover, what are you eating?
Okay, my hungover meal, definitely just like fried chicken burger and chips. I want all the grease, all the dirt.
And is that delivered? Is that made in the kitchen?
No. I'm not cooking when I'm
So you're lying
hungover.
In bed and you just order it from anywhere in particular?
No, because you know what it is? I live in Walthamstow. Walthamstow's great for many things, but for like food spots like that, nothing particular. They have like chains, and then they also have like random burger joints.
Yeah.
And then finally, morning drink. Normally you wake up, you're not hungover. What is your drink of choice? You may think this is a bit of a weird question. We've had some really weird answers.
Yeah. I'm just gonna be boring.
I'm
really big on drinking water.
Anything in particular? Because we've had some unusual water.
Yeah.
I don't like flavored water.
No. Temperature is the water?
Room temp. Yeah.
Okay.
I've got quite sensitive teeth. Yeah.
Hot as well. We had a guy who just downed a pint of hot water. Ruben. You know Ruben?
Oh, I know Ruben. Yeah. He came into Mob. I know Ruben. Love Ruben. He's cool.
Yeah, he's very cool.
That's really
rogue.
He's
drinking boiling water to start his day.
Oh my gosh.
Just cleanses his soul.
No. I'm a water baby. Then if not just juice, but again, apple and mango all the way, or just apple if there's no mango.
What about if you're in a hotel, there's a food buffet, how do you attack it? That's my new favorite question.
Oh, okay. Question. To be fair, I'm going on a holiday next month to an all-inclusive, and I already emailed them asking if they do pina coladas, because that's the most important thing. I need unlimited.
Where are you going? What country?
We're going to Greece.
Nice, okay.
Crete. Never been to Greece. But also because it's going to be a resort, I'm not going to do the whole like...
No. You should be chilling.
Like seeing Greece, but it'll still be nice. So the last time I went to a hotel and had a similar situation, I pigged out, I'll be honest. I did the whole like sausage, eggs, bacon, then you go back and you get the pancakes and the waffles, then you go to the egg station and then you finish with fruit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I go proper dirty. And then if there's ever any like typical food from that country, so the last place I went to was Antigua. So anytime they had little bits of like Caribbean breakfast, I would always... But I also find that in places like that, it's like... It's a bit of a niche thing, do you know what I mean? Like they give you the American style food and they give you the like westernized food, but it's like, I want to try your food, but obviously we're in a resort, whatever, it's fine. But I do find it kind of annoying how when you go to a hotel or a resort, it's really hard to find like typical food.
Proper local food where you are. It's actually probably going to be the best food they've got.
Exactly. Yeah.
You started your chefing career as an apprentice chef after, was it Westminster College, right?
Mm-hmm.
Caprice Holdings followed by Sexy Fish. What was that like? Because Sexy Fish at that point in time was probably the hardest place to get into in London, ironically.
Sexy Fish was really cool. So, sorry, just to correct you. I went to Caprice before I went to cooking college. So I was lucky. Oh. I got my first job when I was in year 10, which is crazy.
Wow.
And I got that from work experience that you get, just normal work experience in school. When you know you have to go for like a week or whatever, you go to like Boots or a pharmacy or like a school. I begged them to get me in a restaurant, specifically a Jamie Oliver restaurant. And they said, we couldn't do that, but we got you into this place called Le Caprice. And I was like, okay, cool.
Okay.
It was meant to be there for 5 days. After the 5 days, I said, please, can I stay? And they said, yeah. So that was where I went for weekends and half terms and summer holidays and all of that until end of year 11.
Tell me that's not where your nickname was Young and Tender.
No. Otherwise, it wasn't there. Because I was 15 when I
was going to get Aaron Brockovich.
Caprice is great.
Yeah.
And then I moved on to Sexy Fish, and then that's when I started college. So Sexy Fish and college went hand in hand, and I went to school one day a week, and I went to Sexy Fish like 4 days a week. And Sexy Fish at the time, I joined like 10 months into their opening. So it was cool because it was before the the empire that they've now built was a thing. And it was a bit more innocent back then. Like, I was really excited to join because that was my favorite style of food. Love Asian, fusion, whatever, all of that kind of stuff. So I really wanted to transfer from Caprice to Sexy. And when I got in, it was kind of just like, I was really young and it was just like, it was just good times. It was really good times. Yeah. I joined at 16 and left at 17.
I'm being ignorant here, but is it now a bit like, you know, the offshoots of the Ivy and stuff?
Yeah. Mm.
Is it now like one of the, what did you call it, those kitchens where you walk in and you just kind of heat stuff in a sous vide and like it's made in the central kitchen, there's not much cooking in the kitchen? Maybe not so much there, but
very good question.
Sexy Fish isn't like this. You've got different sections. So you've got the larder section where you could do all the starters and you have a lot to do. Like that's where I learned to confit duck, for example, because they're iconic crispy duck and watermelon salad with like the hoisin star dressing. Then you have a wok station, so you're making everything fresh there. You've got a sushi station, so obviously that's all fresh. And then tempura, you're learning how to tempura. And then you've got a dumpling station where you learn how to make a dumpling mix from scratch and then fold all the dumplings.
So it's legit.
Yeah. And then you've got a Rabata grill where everything gets grilled.
Oh, right.
Sexy Fish is legit.
You then went off and became a commis chef at The Laughing Gravy. Talk us through what it was like working under the head chef, Michael Facey. Apparently David Attenborough was a local. Is that true? Is that a conspiracy theory?
Maybe it's a conspiracy. But also, like a conspiracy. The Laughing Gravy is deep in my archives mentally because that was definitely the worst restaurant I worked in. And that was the one I did the longest in.
Yeah.
And that's actually, it was like down the road. The only time I ever used to come to Southwark was to go there.
Oh, no. PTSD.
I saw a review being like, it's kind of like a shit Hope and Anchor. Obviously, Hope and Anchor is a pretty good Canton Arms group.
Mm. Yeah.
Mike Davies worked there.
Honestly, The Laughing Gravy was the worst of
the worst. Tell us about it.
Chef was hired by his friend who owned the restaurant, I think, and obviously like the guy that hired him was like front of house, and obviously chef like was in charge of the kitchen, and he just wanted to save money on everything. So he was the biggest cheapskate, and obviously, you know, when someone wants to save money, like they never really care about the like how what it takes to get to the end result, just as long as it's the cheapest way possible. And I was just trapped there. Like, at the time that I joined, my college did this new thing where they were like, oh yeah, by the way, like the restaurant that you're going to join now has to sponsor your course for like £10,000. I don't know how the logistics works, but whatever. And you also can't leave because you can't just job hop and ask everyone to sponsor you 10K. So like the place that you've chosen, you kind of have to stay, and you have to stay for the rest of school, which was like a year and a half. Yeah. So annoyingly, I was trapped there for a year and a half. I learned a lot there. It was very hands-on as well. I was running my section as a little, you know, young upcoming chef, whatever. But it wasn't the greatest, I would say. Like a lot of shortcuts, a lot of just like bad practices. And it was the only restaurant that I've ever worked in that I didn't want to eat at, which is a lot.
I was just gonna say, good to know what not to do.
Yeah.
I learned that, you know?
What's been the worst day in the kitchen across all the places you worked in?
Worst day?
We always ask, like, there's always one nightmare.
Yeah, we're just day. Everything goes to shit.
Yeah.
Oh, this just makes me sad for little Gels because she was just such a crier, man. She was crying over everything. So when I was at Sexy Fish, I basically made friends with the pastry chef at one point, and he would come to the kitchen and I'd be like, oh my god, I want to do pastry, oh my god, I want to do pastry. So one day he was like, actually just come to pastry, like officially transfer. And I was like, oh my god, this is my moment to like learn. And pastry was really hard. It was really technical. I remember once burning a whole pot of mango or passion fruit curd, and it was on induction. And obviously, because it's on induction, like the heat's a bit deceiving. Like, obviously, you don't feel the heat. Mm. And then I was whisking. And one day, like, all the lumps just came out, and it was like black lumps, and it just looked like it was speckled with vanilla, but it wasn't vanilla. It was just burnt curd. So, anyways, that wasn't even the bad day, but that was my vibe on pastry. Like, I really didn't do well. And then I wanted to come back to main kitchen. So I asked the head chef, not the executive chef, but I asked the head chef and he said, yeah, whatever, fine. The executive chef is this guy called Bjorn Webster or something. He's German. He's really, really, really cool, really talented, really intelligent, but obviously quite like stern and stuff. So one day he found out that I'd transferred, even though I asked, and he basically just let it rip on me. Like, he took me to the private dining room and there was a whole group of people there. Like, it wasn't even just me. It was like the guy that agreed for my transfer, the pastry chef and me and the exec. And he basically just went nuts at me and was like, you're young, you're learning, you're not allowed to just like give up on something when you don't like it. Basically just saying, because you're bad at pastry doesn't mean you can move. And the whole time I was trying to say but he wouldn't let me speak. And obviously, like, I was kind of upset because the guy who agreed to let me move sat there in silence, didn't say anything, didn't say, oh, by the way, like, I get what you're saying, but I let her. He thought I'd just done this by myself and taken up like my own initiative to just do this. So anyways, that day I just cried and cried and cried and cried, and he put me back on pastry. And I left not long after, actually. That was the beginning of the end.
But pastry was the start of the end.
Yeah, Bjorn, the beginning of the end.
Bjorn.
If you could be in charge of one restaurant in the world, where would it be?
There's this one restaurant that's on my radar in Copenhagen. Every time they post, I'm like, I need to be there. It's called, it's one of those words that you like, is really hard to pronounce. It's like B-A-R-C-H, but I think there's like, I think it's like a Nordic vibe.
Bach.
Or like Copenhagen-esque. Yeah. I don't know how you would pronounce that. Yeah. I think maybe the H is silent. I don't know. Maybe the C is silent.
Could all be silent. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's in terms of the vibe, it reminds me very much of kind of similar style to Lyle's in Shoreditch. I think that one star. I haven't been there, but in terms of like, if I was going to compare it to a restaurant in London, I would say it's a bit similar to that. And Lyle's isn't even particularly like a restaurant on my radar. It's just I noticed they have a
and what about
style.
In England if you could run one?
I would probably say Kiln because it's my favourite. I would want to be in the midst of
you'd
it.
You'd be amazed by the amount of people who come on and say Kiln is their favourite. I mean, it must be
Kiln's doing bits.
Have you guys been?
Yeah. I mean, it is insane.
Yeah,
it is insane.
Okay,
but
good.
I think chefs appreciate it more than maybe even
hunters.
Yeah, no, because it's serious. Hunters. Like, it's serious stuff going on there, you know? Yeah.
I think it's time we get some food out. So, Ben, why don't you explain what you've made for Angelica?
Well, I kind of,
bring it all out.
I'll bring it all out. Mm. It's also not hot.
That's okay.
So I don't want you to have to eat it. This is just because you got. I've read about you in the Daily Mail.
Yeah, but we were gonna say.
I made my own little crispy seaweed.
Did you use my recipe?
Ben is brought out.
Although I couldn't. Yeah,
some crispy seaweed.
I made some prawns.
Can you tell us about the crispy seaweed? You went viral. You were in national newspapers because you revealed the secret to every Chinese restaurant up and down this country.
No, growing up, Chinese takeaway was my favorite. We'd get it pretty much every Friday, whatever. You know, mum's treat. And then obviously, no takeaway is complete without the crispy seaweed. And growing up, my whole life, I just assumed it was seaweed because it's in the name. Yeah. And I was maybe about 20 something years old when I found out it's just cheap little greens that you can get from pretty much anywhere in the UK. And I made a video on it just showing you how to make it, being like, did you know? And then it actually went viral like a year after I posted it. Like this is from like 2022 and it went viral last year.
People just coming around to it.
So it's greens deep fried with something on top, right?
Sugar, salt and MSG. Literally. Yeah. And then you can get this, to make it complete, you get this tuna. Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's basically tuna fiber. No. But the jar costs like £7 and I literally used it once just for the garnish.
Yeah. Well, I always thought also they use like dried scallops on the top. Sometimes.
Yes, that's what it's called on the menu. But that
that's
is
the
actually
tuna stuff.
Yeah, so they're just lying in terms
Why
of
they
the lying
to us so much?
But I don't mind. I want to be
no,
nice
I'm there.
To
I also,
to me.
It's on every order.
Lie
this is Cabo Nero, so this is kind of bougie.
Well, Ben, quickly take us through what we've got in front of us.
So I've just done some, these are all your recipes.
Down the microphone, please.
Wait, what? These are my recipes?
Yeah, just I think so.
Well, go on.
So this is, I don't know how you pronounce it, but these like...
Oh, I know, the soy cucumber.
I just thought that was cool. I've always wanted to do the little, so you put the chopsticks.
Oh my God, I'm flattered, but also so surprised that this is happening.
And then...
Take us through what it is.
So it's the little cucumbers.
Yeah.
But you do, and I've always just seen it on like TikTok and Instagram, but I've never done it because, I don't know, I guess I was sleeping on it. And you cut through the cucumber like this, then you turn it over and cut through the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, I could try and lift it off.
Kind of like how you do a Hasselback, similar.
Yeah. But both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you get this like concertina.
And what's it marinating in there? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look at that. I hope the camera's picking that up. That's a shot of the series so far.
No, you're fine.
And what's that in?
It's in just good stuff.
So okay, like good stuff.
Soy, ginger, chili oils.
Okay.
Good stuff.
And then we've got some crispy seaweed, fake Chinese seaweed, which is actually the way they do it.
Cavolo Nero, sugar, salt, MSG. I didn't do the floss business.
Then here?
That is char siu chicken. That's one of yours.
This is actually
absolutely
so
delicious.
Funny.
I want to say as well, I had this for dinner last night just because I was like, I just want to make sure it's good.
Yeah.
And it was fucking delicious.
Oh.
And then I made some bougie prawn toast on like sourdough with like delicious stuff in the prawns.
If we weren't on the pod, I'd be crying right now.
Well, please don't. Cry. Because instead of
take
crying.
Take yourself to the walk-in and have a cry. That's what I used to
the
do.
The best place
to
cry.
Yeah. Just get it out. Steal some produce to just get it back at them and then walk back into the kitchen.
Exactly.
Instead of crying, please tell us your go-to delivery order and then you can tuck in.
I always love something fried. Fried chicken burger is my number one, whether I'm hungover or not.
Okay.
Live on fried chicken.
Yeah, me
Fair
too.
Play.
And chips.
What about the dish you cook the most midweek?
Right now, it is pie and mash. But in general, I would say it's like a grilled chicken dish with like Nando's sauce. So basically using Nando's sauce as your like flavor booster and to make it super quick. Grill some chicken, put some Nando's sauce in it, chuck it in the oven, put some more sauce on it, have it with rice, have it with mash, have it with whatever. Or I also do this like potato bake thing where I like mandolin potatoes, put some onion and garlic in there too, and then put whatever flavor I want into the potatoes. So for example, if it's going to be lemon and rosemary, Nando's sauce can go in there, cover the potatoes in water in a tray, put chicken on top, and it's kind of like a tray one bake thing, and then the potatoes cook, and it's really nice.
Wow.
Sounds delicious. Mm.
Well, get tucked into this food.
Because you don't have to,
we're about,
cold.
We're about to ask you what your favorite meal deal combination is.
Okay, my favorite meal deal. Yeah. So I'm going to be really annoying. Again, not I don't love meal deals because I don't love sandwiches.
No.
But if I am going to eat one, I'm going to be a bit bougie and get the duck wrap.
Yes.
Yeah. If I'm, gonna, if I'm
like
eating
that.
A sandwich, that's what it's going to be from a supermarket. Yeah, yeah. And if not, usually the smoked salmon and cream cheese. Mm-hmm. But I'm a bit weird about cheese. Fun fact, cheese is actually my worst food in the world.
Well, thank God there's no cheese here.
Yeah, no, no, no. There's actually no cheese on my page. Like, I don't know if any,
I didn't plot
really,
that.
No, yeah.
Well, now, like, I'm not a cheesy. Check that later.
I'm not yeah. a cheesy girl. I've made a porcini carbonara, so Fez, that was parmesan.
Yeah.
But you will never have me making anything cheesy.
No.
Really?
Ever, okay. ever, ever. No. Hate
Fair
it.
Enough.
You've been warned, listeners.
Okay. So I forgot what I was saying.
We were talking
cheese? Oh,
no cheese.
Sorry,
we were talking meal deals.
Yeah,
so you've
sorry.
Got your hoisin duck.
Yes.
Or
and
your
then,
salmon and cream cheese.
Yes.
But you don't like cheese.
Yes. That's a bit of a weird one.
And then
crisps. I usually go for Sensations. Is that in meal deals? I don't
really yeah.
Sensations sweet chili.
Yeah,
best crisps ever.
They are great.
And I also go for water because, you know, health is wealth.
Fair play.
Health
fizzy
is
or still?
No, no, no. Fizzy water is weird.
You don't like it?
No, no, no. Don't tamper with my water, guys. Oh. I just want normal. I don't want it flavored.
I
don't want it to tickle my tongue.
Culture.
I don't.
Don't you drink it just before you go to bed?
I drink it the whole time.
Yeah.
Even after I go for a run. That is bad because then you're actually dehydrating yourself after
yeah.
a run.
Oh, interesting.
You're literally parched.
Yeah. I walked into an internet conversation the other day.
Go on.
Oh, I don't know what it was on. But people were talking about how much they hate fizzy water.
Really?
It was new to me.
I love it.
Yeah, I just don't really get it.
What about your go-to spice? You said you loved spice. What is your go-to spice, if you could pick one?
I mean, I love Five Spice at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think it adds a layer
cheating,
of like...
Cheating, but okay.
Well, you want to grind all five.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, I'm joking.
No, you're funny.
I'm joking. Five Spice.
A singular spice. I'm also loving turmeric.
Mm.
Yeah.
Love.
I'm loving seeds. Fennel seeds.
Oh, yeah.
Cumin seeds.
Oh, my gosh,
like,
yeah.
I'm obsessed with them now.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. It's taken over my kimchi obsession.
Really?
Yeah, I can't stop seeding stuff. I'm like...
That's nice.
I always am reaching for the cumin seeds, no matter what I'm cooking right now. Which is interesting.
Yeah, and all, I mean, good. You're bringing flavor to the party.
Yeah, yeah.
I was meant to make like a dukka.
Oh, yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, yeah, dukka. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To go on this.
It was like an Asian-y one. It was like Szechuan, peanut, chives.
Yeah.
I think there was five spice in the dukka
as
well.
There was. Hmm. And I didn't have all the ingredients, so I actually just didn't bother.
No, that's okay, but
which
you put some sesame
lazy.
Seeds on there.
Well, I think
yeah,
you should try,
you know,
and
got try
something
yeah,
a bit
yeah,
so we
yeah.
can get some feedback on
yeah,
it.
Go last, on. These are delicious.
Last week I was criticised for not letting, who was it? Someone, we finished the pod. Was it George? We didn't even let him eat stuff, did we? On
what am I trying? Should I try the
try everything.
Have a go.
Please, or anything
I
you want to try.
Some sort of
no. Okay, I'll have a
you didn't bring any side plates today. What are you thinking?
I just got in my own head this morning, Freddie, when I was packing my bag. I don't know. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
I forgot stuff.
Imagine if I don't like it. That'd be so funny.
There are some paper plates the producers
told us. That's George from the Wings.
Yeah. Where are they, George?
Mm. Oh
yes,
God.
Please.
Oh, yeah.
They're good, right?
If we could, just so we don't ruin the
I
day.
I mean, it's your recipe.
Oh, my God.
Is it meant to taste like that? Because I found
exactly
it
like
absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
Freddie,
so
get on
I'm
these.
I'm going to get on these.
No
quite spicy,
so
though.
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they a tiny bit spicy?
Yeah, it's definitely
I'd say
spicy.
It's more than tiny bit spicy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But in a good. Look at that.
Am I meant to take the whole thing?
Yeah, and I'll follow you to
no,
the face.
It's not
can't.
A lot. It's
I'll
just
follow
cucumber.
You to the face.
It's just
no,
cucumber,
I
though.
No, can't.
You can.
It's just cucumber.
Can I? But it's going to ruin my
jumper.
I'm
we'll following you to
in.
The face.
Oh. Yeah.
Wow.
I hope we got oh,
George,
you.
Thank you so much.
Mm.
Hot? You're never going to come back from that.
No, it's great.
All right.
They're good, right?
I'll tell you, it does a good one of those. Daddy Bao.
Yeah, you love Daddy Bao.
Daddy Bao's bloody good. I do love Daddy Bao, actually.
Yeah, they are even better.
What
than
about your
does.
Go-to item? Now, this is a random fridge snack combo. Came to us the other day when we were sort of both on the phone opening the fridge. It's not quite time for lunch nor supper. Breakfast has been and gone, but you're hungry. And you look in the fridge and you see like random things and you start. So mine was like, I can't quite remember, was it? Cheese with a cherry tomato with a bit of kimchi with like a nut.
Yeah.
Like the random things you put together in weird moments in the day. Probably the longest winded question ever. But.
No, it's good. I'm with you. I was blow for
random
blow with you
snack. When it comes to snacking, I'm quite like a bougie snacker, I'll be honest.
Okay.
And again, it just ties into my leftovers. Like, I'm just so blessed when it comes to food because I'm always cooking. So it means I always have leftovers. So it can literally be like 11 a.m. and I could have like leftover confit duck and rice and I'll just eat that. And I'll just microwave the portion that I want instead of having like a specific snack. But in terms of like normal snacks, I'm more of like a salami girl. Mm. Like having a full salami stick as opposed to like the pre-sliced. Either way, it's fine. But I'm more likely to have a stick in my fridge. And
that's seaweed's
like...
banging.
Good, right?
Yeah, fake seaweed.
Do you ever go in for like mad combos though? So like a bite of salami.
To be fair, yeah,
I was going to say cheese, but you won't have cheese in the house.
I could eat Parmesan if I'm feeling rogue.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Parmesan, I don't mind. Like, I can appreciate Parmesan on pasta.
Just take a bite out of a
piece of crisps. Do you eat crisps or not?
Love crisps. Yeah. Love crisps. I love Sweet Chilli Sensations. It's my number one. But they're quite expensive these days. Crisps are so expensive these days. Everything. Every time I go to buy crisps, I'm like, but why? Because the bag is half empty. Anyways.
Yeah, it's not right.
But then obviously, like, I love a classic, like balsamic and vinegar. Oh, so good. So I would say, I would eat salami, I'd eat my leftovers, but I'm more like mix and match. So I can go from sweet to savory, then back to sweet. I might have chocolate, then I might have some leftover roast meat, and then I might have like an orange juice, and then I might have.
So you like are like George noodles. And Ben. I like you that. Can do
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I can't. I need to go savory and then sweet afterwards.
Really?
Well, sweet tends to be like the final countdown. It's a curtain being drawn on my savory journey.
I see where you're coming from. Sometimes you don't know
I can't stop.
That you've sated your savory.
True.
So you into sweet and then you've got to come back.
No, it does feel good actually going back and savour it. It's a bit cheeky.
It's really cheeky.
When you were a chef and you got back from a long shift, I'll ask both of you this, what was the dish you know, if you were still hungry after a long, long shift, you get back probably like, I don't know, what, 12, 1 in the morning? What would be the thing you would eat if you needed to whip something up?
That's a good question.
Ben, do you want to start?
I can start. So obviously it slightly depends, but like probably like 7 times out of 10, so 70% of the time,
that's very exact.
I would have like, if I had leftover rice, which I try to always have because I cook too much always, just a fried rice
late at
night.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Anything in the fridge kind of getting like tossed in it, and then soy, bit of fish sauce sometimes, and then fried rice.
What about you, Angelica?
Love that fried rice. Yeah. Mm. I would say when I wasn't eating cereal, because cereal weirdly was like a really nice midnight snack.
Yeah, same with George.
Easy, sweet. I would say probably going down the like pimp your instant noodles vibes. Mm-hmm. Instant noodles, but kind of pimp it up. Might get an egg yolk in the broth sometimes, enrich it, go with the seaweed, the nori, I don't know, any pickles.
100%.
Kimchi. Something like that, do you know what I mean?
Kimchi.
What's the best cereal in the world?
Right now, I've got Crunchy Nut at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say Crunchy Nut.
No, right now I've got Crunchy Nut. It goes between Crunchy Nut and anything like chocolatey. Like Cocoa Pops. But I also like Cocoa Shells.
Yeah.
They started to do
it. They're French
often.
For some reason.
Yeah, I was literally going to say they started to do this in the country a bit more often because before it was a holiday thing. You know, on holiday, you get a cool cereal. They've actually brought it to the UK now, but only in certain shops.
Do you just keep one? This is actually, I'll ask you this as well, Freddie. I feel like I don't ask you enough questions.
No, please do.
Are you a single cereal person and you finish the box and then you mix it up? You would never have a few in the house.
Mainly because, again, it's just me having it by myself. Like when I lived with my mum and I would ask her to buy Crave.
Yeah, right. So you'd have Crave.
Special K and Cocoa Pops.
And would you mix them?
Yes. But in like, okay, so for example, I would have a bowl of Crunchy Nut and then put a sprinkle of Cocoa Pops on the top.
Just
to dilute the tiny bit. But I couldn't have a full 50-50 mix. I couldn't have it when it's like half-half and I couldn't have it when it's just all together. It would have to be like a little garnish or a little sprinkle to the side.
Yeah, nice.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I did love mixing cereal.
Chefing it up even on cereal.
I'm normally one, but since we kind of touched briefly on it with George, who said they mix. I've tried it this week. Weirdly, just got a delivery in from America. So I did a Fifths, Captain Crunch, Lucky Charms. My mum actually just got back from France, had bought the Kellogg's chocolate kind of clusters they do, which are a lot better than the ones over here. So that's 3 of the fifths. And then the other one is these really dry choco wheats, which I just can't get rid of. And then the fifth was something really depressing, which kind of made me feel better about myself.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It was all right?
Loved it.
That's quite an international blend as well.
Dry it up. Oh yeah, it's a beautiful.
No milk.
Post-Brexit Britain blend.
Yeah, it is.
Opening ourselves up to the world. obviously, you worked a lot for Mob.
Yeah.
You said earlier, you know, you're not a huge fan of sandwiches, but every Thursday you had to make a sandwich.
Oh yeah.
What was the best one you made?
I called it the pockle bun, and it was basically a pork and apple sandwich, hence the word pockle.
It's actually very clever.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. Yeah. It was really cool. So basically, pork is my favorite meat ever. Yeah. I love roast pork, love crispy pork, love all things pork. So I did basically like a roast pork belly with crispy crackling. Obviously, you got the meat, and then you got the applesauce, you got a slaw. I'm pretty sure we used ciabatta that day, or did we use focaccia? I can't remember. My kind of sandwich, because I don't love them, is like a leftover roast dinner sandwich. Yeah, so nice. I basically just tried to make that in a sandwich.
Sounds like you did make that in as well.
Mob has become the home of sort of creating fads. It has educated the kind of what I would say the uneducated foodie minds of this country by actually making them feel educated enough to cook, which has been brilliant.
Yeah.
But they do become obsessed with things. What's been the best fad? What's been the worst fad from Mob or just in general?
I'll start by saying
the worst one's the chopped
salads. Everyone was hating the chopped salads, which I don't even think was that bad because, I mean, it was okay, but now they're doing boiled dinners, which I think obviously they're playing on to the fact, you know, they're refusing to call it anything but the word boiled. I mean, on purpose. I think it's quite funny, to be fair. But the boiled dinners is kind of worse for me than a chopped salad. Chopped salad, at the end of the day, obviously didn't look great, but at the end of the day, it's kind of how you make a salad. Whereas boiled dinners, it was giving
depressing.
It just looks very anemic, you know, very
looks like
pale.
A Victorian workout. So the start of Oliver, 1966, the Oscar-winning musical, brilliant musical if you haven't watched it, but it starts with a huge boil of gruel, and it kind of looks like that.
So I'd say that, but they're obviously getting the people going in the comments. They love it.
Is that what their game is?
No, I mean, it's just probably, I don't know, but in the sense of like, if I was going to make something like that, of course you could jazz up the name of it, or you could just call it something like boiled dinners just, you know,
when you work there, how much direction do they give you and what of what they want from, because you were sort of creating food there and...
So you have daily team meetings in the morning. Every morning you have a team meeting with your manager as a group, and it's kind of like a briefing for the day. You talk about what you've got to cook, but everything's very like well planned out. Like I guess the stories is probably the thing that's a bit more less regulated, but all your dishes are planned out like at least 2 weeks in advance or something like that, because obviously they're working on a schedule. Like things don't just like fall onto the page, like everything's planned.
What's been your most viral recipe you've created?
I only did a few recipes with Mob, but on my page I would say my lobster and
just cooking for a queen.
Yeah, that's your bougie series.
Yeah, I like that.
So my lobster,
the plums
with...
look great, the last one.
That was yesterday, did you see? But what's it called, I did a lobster with a coconut and turmeric sauce. And the garnish was like Brussels sprouts. But again, this was something, this is a, I actually made this just before I started at Behind, but this was a thing where it's kind of like less is more. Like it was a really simple dish. It was literally a piece of lobster tail with a sauce that was like bright yellow. And then I literally just got raw Brussels sprouts and took like the leaves off as like a little shell. And then I kept half raw, put half in the oven and roasted them. So you had the contrast of like kind of like nearly burnt ones and then like raw ones. And that was the dish. And it got like, it's on 400,000+.
Well,
and
that you're kind welcome.
Of, that's basically what got my page into the, like the 10K mark plus. At the time that I posted it, I had 3K. And then by the end of the month, I had 10K. And then now I'm on like just under 20. But that was, it was literally from that one video. None of my other, like, obviously in the background they do.
We do.
Did you film this stuff?
I did, but not in a way that is going to send it viral.
Well, we're going to finish off by talking about your go-to locations, and we're going to start with your go-to weeknight restaurant.
I would say anywhere in Hoxton for like Vietnamese, any of those places, you know, that long road where they do love all of those. Tried a few.
Favorite place for a special supper?
It was going to have to be Kiln, I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. Do not apologize.
I mean, you're obviously getting paid by them in some way.
I want an invite meal.
Best place for a date?
Brat.
They're paying,
stunning
hopefully.
Stuff. Oh my gosh, stunning stuff. That anchovy flatbread, that one that puffs up.
Different gear, but...
Your go-to pub?
Faltering Fullback, because I'm a North London. That's like...
Did you go on Green Road?
Yeah, that's very close to home. I grew up in like Muswell Hill.
Really?
So that's super close to home.
That's nice.
Where's the place to get the best pizza in town?
It's going to have to be Crisp.
Have you been there?
Yes, I've been there twice. Ooh. And I just find it very annoying how it's really hard to get their pizza. I went there for the first time last summer as a group. I did the whole, like, my friend sorted it out. I turned up and eventually we had the pizza. This year I went there by myself. And basically, you know how they have a number in their bio?
Yeah.
I thought the number was like beneficial to like, I don't know, like help me book. So I've texted the number, said, hey, can I come for a solo thing? They said, yeah, sure. You're solo, so come anytime. Like you're easy to fit in. So I've texted them, cool, I booked it in. I've got there, paid for the pizza. pizza, £20 pizza is crazy, by the way, but worth it. And then I had to wait 50 minutes for my pizza. But I just didn't understand. Yes, it was worth it. It was my second time and I was happy I went. But I was like, I thought the whole point of me texting you was to avoid the 50 minutes.
No.
And I went by myself and I also didn't have headphones that day.
Oh,
so I was
no.
in this pub by myself, waited 50 minutes.
Just with your own thoughts.
Literally.
What were you doing?
Just staring into space. At one point, these two old men were talking to me, and obviously, like, they were nice.
Did you grab a drink or?
No, I didn't. Wait. I literally.
Well, you spent 20 quid on the pizza. I mean, you don't
think
I
was on TikTok. That's probably just on TikTok.
Yeah, with no headphones.
That's fine.
People like, can you turn that down?
Yeah.
What about your favorite hidden gem?
It's a stall, annoyingly, like not a restaurant. It's a stall in a farmer's market and it hops around to different places, but it's called Bocket. I'm pretty sure it's French and Caribbean fusion.
Nice.
Mm. They make everything from scratch on site. So they have this dough and then it kind of like roll it into a ball, kind of like a pita, chuck it in hot oil, it will puff up and then they make it. So they kind of like cut it in half so it's like a hollow thing. So it's basically like a pita homemade. And then they fill it with your choice of protein, which I always get chicken. And then you can also choose your spice sauce.
Mm.
So it's like different levels, choose your spice. So that goes in there.
What's your level?
I always get level, do we get three? Yeah, we get three and five. So we basically get a large one in three and then a tiny one because you can get three different sizes in five. So we have like a really hot, spicy one, but tiny.
And then,
and then like
level
a massive big one.
Yeah.
It's really, really
So you can
really
handle
good.
Your spice?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love spice.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good. What's it called again, sorry?
Bocket, B-O-K-I-T.
Be okay, team. We'll have to get down there.
And then move around. Like North London.
Yeah, Alexandra Palace Farmers Market.
A long way to go, but we'll go.
No, seriously,
we'll go.
Yeah, we'll definitely go.
We'll
and
go.
They go to places like Carnival. I mean, obviously that's like once a year, but still.
Yeah,
fine.
And I'm pretty sure they have another site which is like Oval side, but again, that's like other side. So maybe that's close to you guys on a different day.
We'll definitely look it up. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Finally, I saw on your page you get to go away to some wonderful places. You were talking about Antigua earlier. But if you could do a dream long weekend, a foodie long weekend, we asked Mr. Sensational Sandwiches this. He started going around about driving cars.
Didn't
we had to remind him he was on a food podcast. If you were doing a long foodie weekend, where are you going?
Abroad.
Could be anywhere.
Well, it could be anywhere. I mean, any city, and abroad.
Okay, yeah. I would say...
And what's your itinerary, sir?
I would say a good foodie trip in Italy.
Mm.
I used to do those quite a lot back in the day, like pre-COVID. And my favorite thing was just go to Italy and go on like a little food tour. There's a few places that I haven't been. I haven't been to Naples yet. I've heard obviously about their amazing pizza.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite places was in Puglia. We went in the summer. And I just remember being like by, not even by the beach, just by like a pier or where the boats
live. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wasn't as well.
And we found this like little shack of a guy and like he had loads of seafood and it was all fresh.
Mm.
And it was the first time I ever had raw mussels.
Yeah.
So I've had obviously oysters and stuff like in London. But this was just like a seafood platter, but the whole thing was raw, just everything, and it was so good.
And he wasn't having you on.
No, he just gave you a wedge of lemon and just said go for it.
Salt and lemon,
and then I think we had like, I don't know, wine in like a plastic cup, and it was just the best.
Doesn't get better
ever. No. I think we had sea urchins in the little thing. Mussels, oysters.
Worried you would get ill or not?
No. I love that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm a bit of a weirdo. I prefer fish raw than cooked.
Fair play.
Bit of a weirdo like that.
Nothing weird about that.
Well, it's weird.
Fine.
I just reminded myself, my mum's currently here with rice food poisoning, reminding the worst you ever had was rice.
Yeah, rice will get
so shout out to her if she recovers.
That's why I never do rice on the pod. Yeah, shout out to your mum.
Reheating something, I think. Or
you got to be careful.
Like that,
did she cook it herself or did she go out for rice?
No, she. My brother got a takeaway in.
Oh, one of those.
It was all a bit of a dodgy one.
One of those.
Was it reheated?
Yeah,
fuck you guys. Anyway. You've been absolutely wonderful. That itinerary sounds incredible. Just quick, I was thinking Barry. Did you ever go there in Puglia? The city of Barry. Everything's deep fried.
Oh, really?
I mean, your heart gets clogged, but it is delicious.
Yeah.
Insane. You've been absolutely wonderful. We're going to finish the way we always do. We're going to ask you, what is your go-to three-course meal? We used to say you have to select it from the dishes you mentioned in this podcast.
You can't
podcast,
ask that anymore.
I've decided no.
No, liberate
I want to know, what is your go-to three-course meal? If you can have three courses...
Is this making like
no,
or
it's to eat? To eat.
Just
to okay, cool. So I would definitely choose prawn dumplings as a starter, whether they're wontons, gyozas, I don't mind. Just a big, but well, maybe not a big because it's a starter, a medium sized bowl of prawn dumplings covered in chili oil, black vinegar, and soy. Love that. That is literally my love language.
Dream.
And what's it called? For mains, I would definitely have to say some form of fried chicken. Or very opposite, duck. Like it's one of the two. I love duck so much, specifically duck legs.
Mm.
Love it. Duck and hoisin is truly like one of my favorite things ever.
Underused in this country, duck.
It is, yeah.
And then we're just going to have to finish on a humble apple dessert. And again, it would probably be a tarte tatin or an apple crumble. I love anything.
Tarte tatin when you finally perfected it.
Yeah.
Well, let's get someone to make it for you. I think that's
fine. What about Gabriel Waterhouse from Gavin Le Chapelle said the best tarte tatin in the world?
Yeah, it did. And it was technical the way
maybe you should try that one.
Yeah, because tarte tatin is like, you can do it, but the way I want to do it is just, you know, there's a lot of technicalities to get there. But we're still trying. We're getting there.
You'll get there.
Well, Angelica, you've been absolutely wonderful. Wish you the best of luck with everything you're doing. You're doing a lot of incredible, incredible stuff across the food space. If you guys want to check her out, obviously we'll put her link in the bio below. We just want to say thank you for listening, and don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating. Tell all your friends that we've got a wonderful podcast called the Go-To Food Podcast, and they should be listening to it as well. And until next week, thank you so much, Angelica. Those are your go-tos.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Angelica.
No, honestly, I've loved it, so thank you.